Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and Happy New Year. We're back. This is Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for listening. We are almost close to 50,000 downloads of the podcast. I want to thank you so much for your support in the last 2 years. This is the third year of the show, and I'm just really very excited and happy about this coming 2011. We're going to have a lot of wonderful shows. Of course, you know, I talk about serious topics. I have some silly topics. I have some, you know, what do you call it, diverse topics. But today we're going to be focusing on stalking awareness. January is Stalking Awareness Month. I didn't even know there was such a thing as Stalking Awareness Month. It just surprises me the things that you don't know about in life. For example, I remember last year learning about Teen Dating Violence Month, that there was a whole month on teen dating violence. I have a teenager, and that just really shook me up that we needed to have a month of this because of the prevalence of the issue. Stalking is an extreme issue going around the country, around the globe. Now we have the internet. There's cyber stalking. People are getting stalked on their cell phones with Foursquare. People know where people are, who they're talking to, Facebook. People are being stalked on Facebook from people from years ago. I mean, they didn't even know, like, we're looking at their stuff, you know. So I think it's a very important issue, stalking. Today we're going to be talking with some great guests, director of the Stalking Resource Center, Michelle Garcia, and also film producer Joe Myers. He created the film Telling Amy's Story, a very powerful documentary based on a true story of a domestic violence situation that did involve stalking. So I want to say good morning to Joe and good morning to Michelle.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you, both of you, for joining the show this morning. I just, as I was saying, just amazed. I found Michelle I was just going through some documents, and there was a conference. There's a whole conference on stalking. I mean, this is a very serious issue, and I don't think people are aware of it. Maybe they brush it aside. Well, he called me a couple times, or she came to my job a couple times, or, you know, she's on my Facebook, you know, a couple times. Maybe people try to minimize, and then it blows up. Michelle, just talk to me in the beginning. Let's just talk, what is stalking? Let's tell the audience what is stalking. What's the definition, the legal definition of stalking?
Well, Joy, that's a great question, and it's really hard to answer from a legal perspective because if we look around the United States, 50 different laws, different law in the District of Columbia, different law in each of the territories. So it's really hard to say there's a legal definition, but the definition that we use is that stalking is a pattern of behavior directed at a specific person that would cause a reasonable person to feel fear.
A reasonable person. You know, that's funny because, you know, when you're in love, they say that's actually a form of, like, what is it, psychosis? You're in a crazy state when you're loving someone. And the reason I bring that up is because for women, based on what I've been reading, it's the intimate partner or someone very close to them that is their stalker.
Absolutely. What we know from the data is that most often victims are stalked by someone they know, and most often that's going to be a current or former intimate partner. And that reasonable person language is in our definition because you mentioned this at the top of the show, that often there's this minimization. And I think particularly when we look at intimate partner stalking, there's a minimization of the seriousness, of the risk, of the danger that this person that we love or were once in love with could actually pose to us. And so the definition really focuses not on necessarily what is that specific victim's reaction, because so many victims so often minimize, but from a reasonable person looking outside, looking at this behavior, looking at this scenario, would that cause a reasonable person to feel fear?
Joe, now you started this film. Did somebody ask you to produce this? Is it something you were interested in producing?
Sure.
How did you start down the path of telling Amy's story?
Sure. Well, it's a long story that I'll try to make short. But essentially, I work with Penn State University for many of the projects that I produce. I'm employed by them, and as a filmmaker, and we were actually approached by the Verizon Foundation, who one of their major corporate philanthropic causes is domestic violence prevention. And it just so happens that we were approached by them. We had a connection to an alumnus who works with Verizon, and they asked us at the university what we were doing in relation to domestic violence prevention. And at the time, we didn't have any specific large initiative, and that got us talking with our local Women's Resource Center. And it came to light that there was a police detective in the area who had been working with the Women's Resource Center to do workshops throughout the community and at the university. To part of that workshop was to tell the story of a local woman who had been in a domestic violence situation and was tragically killed by her husband. And
is that Detective Fischel, Deirdre Fischel?
Yes,
that's
Detective Fischel.
She was awesome on your film. She was so passionate about the subject. I really had a huge amount of respect for the amount of time and energy it seems that she took. I was telling Joe Michelle earlier, and for the listeners, we talked just briefly earlier, the beauty of his film is a beautiful film. It's not very long. It's under an hour. You need to take a look at it. You can go to telling.psu.edu. Again, that's telling, T-E-L-L-I-N-G, .psu.edu. Check out the film there. It's a beautiful film. And what I really appreciate about the film is the timeline that was visually shown. This is credit to Joe and the director, I'm sure, the editing of a timeline of this story and the different times when the victim reported incidents, or incidents happened at her job, or incidents happened on the middle of the road, all different things. But it was a visual display that was flashing past this detective.
Yep.
Of the different reports. So definitely want to check out that film. But I'm sorry, go ahead and continue, Joe, about your story.
Well, essentially, we began working with our local Women's Resource Center, and the first thing we wanted to do was to try to figure out how we could take some of what Detective Fischel does, even a small part of it, and bring that to a wider audience, because she is a professional police detective and doesn't have the time to be giving thousands of workshops every week.
Is that because there's a lot of crime going on in the world? One of the things she talked about in the film is that it was called Happy Valley at the State College.
Exactly.
And that there was, you could, you know, walk in the middle of the night to the store. I want to bring Michelle back in the conversation here. Michelle, what do you find the connection? How often do you find domestic violence and stalking connected? Is it 50% of the time, 75% of the time? Where do you see the connection?
We see it quite often. In 2009, the Department of Justice released a national report on stalking from the largest national study ever done on stalking in the United States. And what they found was that in a one-year period, 3.4 million people are stalked every year in the United States. And that's just adults. That's not even looking at youth. Of those 3.4 million people, what they find is over a third of the time, those victims are stalked by a current or former intimate partner. And so we closely see those connections. In another national study, what they found was that over 80% of victims who were stalked also experienced physical abuse by an intimate partner. So we see that really, really strong connection between stalking and domestic violence. And I think most startlingly is that when we look at the lethality, when we look at cases where women were murdered or experienced an attempted murder by a current or former intimate partner, overwhelmingly they were stalked prior to their murder. 3 out of 4 of women who are murdered by an intimate partner are stalked in the year prior to their murder.
Yeah, one of the statistics on your website talks about 89% of femicide victims have been physically assaulted and also stalked 12 months before their murder. Joe, as a man, I mentioned that I wanted to bring this up. How did you feel at the beginning of the film, you know, on your journey? You know, you're probably excited to, you know, make a film that's your love. But then by the end, what was the change that maybe happened to you? Were any changes happening to you during the film, by the end of the film?
Absolutely. You know, I went into it feeling that I was pretty aware of the prevalence of domestic violence and stalking. And the tragedy of it, but it really became much more personal in talking to the coworkers of the woman who had been killed and her friends and family, and just seeing how many times in her life there were events that if we had been able to connect, before she was killed, maybe we would have been able to do more. And that, to me, was the saddest part of the story, that it was impossible for any one person in her life to see everything that happened to her in context. But had we been able to do that, and if we are in the future able to do a better job of that, I think that our opportunity to make a difference is significantly greater.
Now, Michelle,
I was going to say, so that was probably the most striking thing to me that really brought home that this is a really big deal, and that there are probably many, many, many more things going on with the people I know, the people I love, the people I work with, than I know about.
Yeah, I think that is very important, that it's a hidden issue. And one of the things that really stuck out from your film is that 500 domestic cases, Detective Fischel said, had been reported within a two-year period, 500 reported. That doesn't mean that there were more not going on unreported.
Yeah.
And that all the homicides for a certain period were a result of domestic violence during a certain period in her district.
And State College, Pennsylvania, where Penn State is located, is consistently ranked in national publications as usually one of the top one, two, or three safest places as far as violent crime is concerned, metropolitan areas in the country. We almost always get that distinction. And I don't want to say it's funny, but it's ironic that then if you look at domestic violence, which often, happens within the home, goes unreported, and doesn't necessarily show up on that set of statistics, and you compare that against the number of calls that she has received in the last 2 years, it's pretty amazing.
Well, Michelle, one of the things that Joe mentioned is that if they could have connected the dots, then perhaps they could have saved this young woman. One of the things that your website, the fact sheet, talks about is that stalking is a crime under the laws of 50 states. But then you said earlier, you know, every state is slightly different, I guess, about how, you know, what can the law do to the stalker. Talk to us about a victim comes to the police station and says that they feel that they've been stalking. What is the protection that the law can offer them?
Well, Joy, that's a good question. I think it really depends in some cases as to what jurisdiction that person is living in, what their law says about, you know, how they define stalking, what becomes criminal behavior. I think our real challenge is, even in states where you can say there is an amazing law here, I think the challenge often is what Joe was just talking about. It's connecting those dots, that when we're talking about stalking, it's often a lot of different behavior happening over a period of time, and in many cases in many different jurisdictions. So some of it may be happening where she lives, and some of it may be happening where she works in a different community, and some of it may be happening where her family is when she goes to visit them, which may be in a different county or even a different state. And so there's a definite challenge in putting all those pieces together, putting the puzzle together, seeing that full picture, and that's one of the real complicated things around addressing the crime of stalking. The other thing that makes it really challenging is when we look at a lot of the behaviors that stalkers engage in, individually they're not criminal behaviors. Making phone calls, showing up in a public place, sending letters, sending emails, sending text messages. And often where I hear victims talking about their frustration when they go to report and not a lot is done is that the response is, we can't do something until something happens, meaning until there's a physical assault or a physical attack. But that was really the point of why stalking laws came into being in the first place 20 years ago, was that by recognizing that this pattern of behavior, these repeated phone calls, the showing up, the text messages, the emails, that this pattern of behavior in and of itself is a crime. And if we intervene now, we can prevent something much more serious from happening. And I want to applaud Detective Fischel, who actually works with the Stalking Resource Center quite a bit. One of the things I've heard her say and other law enforcement officers say is that if we intervene appropriately in a stalking case, what we're doing is we're stopping a homicide in progress. Because
Michelle, say that again. That's a very, very powerful statement you just made. If we intervene in a stalking...
If we intervene appropriately in a stalking case, we may be stopping a homicide in progress.
A homicide in progress. So if you're listening today upset, you need to pay attention. If you know someone, if you are someone, please reach out to try to get help. And Michelle's Center, the Stalking Resource Center, they have a 1-800 number. You can call 1-800-FYI-CALL. Again, 1-800-FYI-CALL. You can also go to their website, which is ncvc.org/src. Again, ncvc.org/src. One of the good things that you have on the website is a stalking incident behavior log. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, one of the things we talk to victims about, and when we talk to law enforcement and victim service providers and other folks who are working with victims, is we really encourage victims or encourage them to think about documenting all the stalking behavior. Because so often it really helps when you have already this documentation or this evidence before you go and report to law enforcement. So document the phone calls when they're coming in, document the emails, save the emails, document the text messages. So just write down briefly, when did it happen? What happened? Were there any witnesses? Witnesses can be really critical in stalking cases. So document what's happening, save evidence if there is evidence, identify witnesses, because then if a victim does choose to report to law enforcement or perhaps get an order of protection, this kind of information is really critical in either building that case or supporting a petition for an order of protection.
I thought that was a great thing. Go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, I think the point that was made by Michelle a few minutes ago about individual events not necessarily violating the law or seeming dangerous in and of themselves is a very good one. And that happened a number of times in this story. Early on in the relationship, many of her coworkers would notice that her soon-to-be husband would come in looking for her at work. And she would often express that it seemed as though he was concerned about her, that this mm-hmm. maybe was a positive thing or part of a budding romance. And, that's, I think, often a problem for people on the outside, that they can see these events not necessarily as threatening events, but as events showing concern or what have you. And only when
interest,
you start to look at
that's
them
in
context with one another, you see, wait, no, this is not how someone should act towards another person.
One of the things your film talks about is the coworker, the job, the business had to send a letter to the guy's job, the stalker's job. I mean, he wasn't labeled a stalker at the time, but to stop him from delivering to their business because it was interfering with the place where the woman worked. And Michelle, psychologically, though, people say, well, this could never happen to me. Is there a profile of the victim? What is the profile of victim? Because in this case, in Joe's film, one of the police officers speaks about the loving family that the young lady had, the love that the father showed the daughter. He remembers her being very happy when she was five, the father, beaming at her. So she didn't seem to come from, drug addiction or alcohol abuse or, childhood. Like, she didn't seem to come from some crazy negative family. Talk to us about who the victim is and who can be affected by this.
Sure. And the reality is anyone can be a victim. Anyone can be a victim of stalking. There isn't a specific profile. Some of the things we do know are that women are nearly three times more likely than men to be stalked, but we are seeing an increasing number of male stalking victims. We know from looking at the research that in terms of 18 and over, the age group 18 to 24 has the highest rates of stalking. But again, we've seen victims who cross the age spectrum up into their 60s, 70s, 80s, even 90s. And so unfortunately, there's no specific profile of, say, a stalking victim or even a domestic violence victim beyond the fact that most often that person will most likely be female.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of Joe, you were saying, you may have friends or family that could be going through and you're just not aware because, of the silence of the issue. If someone came to you as a friend, a female friend or a male, a guy can be stalked too. I don't want to sit here and, only women. Guys can be stalked. One of the things I was reading, this is from the FBI Law Enforcement Bulletin. This was 2002. The persons who stalk men tended to be strangers or acquaintances rather than intimates, like spouses or boyfriends. So if someone did come to you, and as a male, what would you say to them? I mean, do you think now because of the film you would push them toward the police, or would you just listen? At what point would you become extremely aggressive with, look, we got to get you out of this, or, you know, document?
Well, that's one of the most difficult things to decide, because I think especially for men who tend to want to push someone immediately to resources and insist that people get help. Because one of the things, you do want to do that, and you do want to be a good listener. At the same time, you want to be patient with someone who is getting to a place where they can make decisions to do this. Because oftentimes when people are pushed too much, they go in the other direction. And so I think it's a matter of being careful and being a good listener to hear what the person is asking you for. Because ultimately they need to make the decision to do this. At the same time, if it affects something like a workplace, there are other decisions to be made. If it might affect the safety of others, but those are also difficult decisions, because often you'll have a victim who is asking you not to make contact with the police. And that's not to say that that's not to disparage a victim, because it's a very difficult situation.
Michelle, one of the things in domestic violence and stalking, I think in any kind of harassment, violence, people are controlled. It's the issue of control and stopping the person from, the getting their freedom, per se. Because in Joe's film, the guy drove her to work, picked her up from work, needed to know her schedule, came by and checked her schedule. I know I had a friend, the person was texting them. And then the issue goes back to, I think, the victim not blaming themselves. One of my friends who was going through a situation, fortunately she wasn't killed, but she would come to me like, well, doesn't that make sense to you that it's wrong that he's doing blah, 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 blah? And I would look at her like, what? You're really asking me that? Of course he's not supposed to be doing that. You know, of course he's not supposed to be, you know, coming to your job all the time. You didn't call him unexpectedly, then you have to, you know, change your plans. Of course he's not supposed to be calling you all times of night, coming by your house. You didn't tell him to come by, coming, breaking into your house. I had a friend tell me the person broke into her house, mm-hmm. and he was there when she got there. Michelle, I'm hard pressed sometimes when I come across people come talk to me. A lot of people talk to me about all kinds of things, not to be aggressive, like Joe said.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do as the friend? You know, what can I just give them documentation? What can I do to help them?
You know, I think it's a really natural response, what you're talking about and what Joe is talking about, that when people we care about turn to us and we see that they're in trouble or we see that they're in pain, that we want to help, and that for many of us, a natural instinct is to want to try and fix everything really quickly. And as you said, that we're talking about situations where this person, the victim of domestic violence and or stalking, is experiencing this loss of control, that this offender, this stalker, this batterer is doing everything to try and maintain power and control over this victim, and that this person has lost that control over time. In fact, when the stalking victims in the report that was released by the Justice Department were asked, what are you most afraid of? Nearly half said not knowing what would happen next. That loss of control over their life, the loss of predictability. And so one of the things we see is that victims often do blame themselves, like you said, and that's a way to try and regain that sense of control. That if as a victim I can say, well, this is happening because I did X or because I did Y, well, I'm never going to do X or Y again, and so this is going to stop and this is going to get better.
This should stop it, yeah. That is so prevalent. I worked in shelters, just even friends. People email, it's this issue, they try to analyze the stalker. They try to analyze the offender as opposed to focusing, I think, on removing themselves from the situation. Now, we only have a couple minutes left. Now, let's talk about the stalker. Is there a particular profile? In Joe's film, one of the things, he was alcoholic. Is there a prevalence of addictions in a stalker? Is there an issue of military service? Is there an issue of, I don't know, having been abused themselves? What is the profile of the stalker,
unfortunately, very similar to victims, there is no definitive profile of a stalker other than the majority of offenders. Most stalking offenders do tend to be male, but also we're seeing increasing numbers of female stalkers as well. So other than that, there really isn't a definitive profile, because we also see stalkers stalk out of many different motivations. In many cases, like we've been talking about, it is related to domestic violence. It is our intimate partner stalkers. But in some cases, it's a neighbor or it's a classmate or someone who's become obsessed with a victim. We see celebrity cases, even though these are a small percentage of the stalking cases, or high-profile figures where someone delusionally believes they have a relationship or are meant to be together with this person. In some cases, we see people who stalk out of revenge or rejection. So a relationship ends, and perhaps there is no history of domestic violence, but one person cannot accept the breakup and either starts engaging in this behavior as a way to reconnect, thinking, wow, if I just try hard enough, if I really show her or him how much I love them, they'll come back. Or because they're hurt and they say, that's it, now I'm going to hurt this person. We see people, in terms of rejection, also getting stalked out of employment rejection. So we've worked with HR folks who've interviewed candidates. When those candidates haven't gotten the jobs, they end up being stalked by them. We are seeing increasing numbers of professors who are being stalked by students who either had crushes on them that got out of hand or didn't like the grade that they got in that class and are seeking revenge against that person. And so there's no definitive profile of a stalker because we see the behavior often emerge out of so many different motivations.
Well, I think that's a good point, and that's why I asked that question, is because sometimes people say, how did I get myself into this? You know, what didn't I see? And all these, and I think it's important, that note is that it can happen to anybody. It can happen anywhere. You could be at work. You could be at school. It could be in your own home, you know, a friend. In terms of men, as we said earlier, it could be someone you don't even know is doing it until maybe a larger incident happens. I want to thank both of you so much for coming on. We only have a couple minutes left of the show. If you're just tuning in, I was speaking with Joe Myers, the producer of Telling Amy's Story. You can check out information about the film at telling.psu.edu. And also speaking with Michelle Garcia. She's the director of the Stalking Resource Center. Their website is ncvc.org/src. They have a 1-800 number you can call, 1-800-FYI-CALL, to get more information. And thank you so much, and I really appreciate the work that you're doing, Michelle, at the center. And, Joe, your beautiful films, please continue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, you can check out the two great websites for the Stalking Resource Center. It's ncvc.org/src. January is Stalking Awareness Month. They have a 1-800 number, 1-800-FYI-CALL. If you want to learn more about the film, also on the film, Mariska Hegarty from Law & Order was on Joe's film, so you want to check that out, telling.psu.edu. To learn more about the film, you can rent the film, you can buy the film on Amazon, so please check that out. Next week, two great shows next week. This month is also Glaucoma Awareness Month, and I'm going to have a wonderful Dr. Mildred Olivier, Associate Clinical Professor at Midwestern University, on the show talking about glaucoma and also her work in Haiti. And then the second show is going to be with author Sabidi Lewis, who wrote the book Ballers of the New School, Race, Sport, and American Culture. So please tune in next week, January 22nd, special time, 11:30 to 12:30 next week. You can follow me on twitter.com/joykeys. You can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. You can also email me if you have any questions, guests you're looking to see, comments about other shows, trying to contact other people, or just want to, you know, send me some comments. SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. That's my email, SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. So I hope that you can tune in next week for a great show with Dr. Olivier. She's Associate Clinical Professor at Midwestern University. She's here. She's going to be on the show representing PreventBlindness.org. And also author Sabidi Lewis. He's a professor at WSUV, and he's also focuses a lot of research on Tony K. Bambara. But his book, Ballers of the New School, you want to pick that up, Race, Sport, and American Culture. So please tune in next week. Thank you so much for supporting the show, and I hope you have a wonderful week. And Monday is Martin Luther King Day. I hope that you're out maybe helping an association in your area, a community center, or maybe just your neighbor, helping with the yard or helping them get rid of things they have in their house. Anything you can do that day of service, I think, would be great, and Martin Luther King would be proud. So you have a wonderful Saturday and a wonderful week, and I hope to hear from you next Saturday, January 22nd.